Hello, everybody. This is Kevin Vellen. We're here for another episode of Vegan Juice. This is a Vellawood-sponsored review of Against the Rules podcast by Michael Lewis. Today, we're talking about season 5, episode 3. As always, I got with me Blake Hart here. Blake, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a couple months since we cut our last one. We had the FSGA conference in between, but there was a particular topic in episode 3 of this season 5 that we're covering that I think is really relevant for what's going on. So I wanted to dive into fantasy sports legislation and regulation and kind of the timeline and trends of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good idea and ties well into the episode really well.
Okay. So if you listen to the episode, they talk about an attorney named Jeremy Coudon, who's kind of famous in our circles. He's a partner at ORIC, who's a really big firm, and they do a lot of regulatory work and some lobbying work. And Jeremy was really instrumental in helping to pass laws which specifically allowed fantasy sports. You know, after UEJA, as we've covered in the last couple of episodes, and we've covered previously, FanDuel and DraftKings said, well, there's this argument that fantasy sports are contests of skill. And so we can now do these under UEJA, under this fantasy sports carve-out. So let's do this. And then they got really creative with this daily fantasy sports concept, these setting these lineups. And then around 2014, 2015, you started, I think Maryland had passed some kind of loose legislation around it, but you had a lot of confusion out there. And so these states are saying, well, are these contests fantasy sports or are they really sports betting? So the way that the episode lays it out is Jeremy Coudon had this idea. Well, let's go find some states to pass legislation to specifically regulate fantasy sports. And Blake, what I really loved about the episode is he said, well, we targeted Kansas because it had a more male-dominated legislature who was relatively youngish compared to other states, which Jeremy and his team thought would be really important if you're going to convince someone that fantasy sports are contests of skill and that fantasy sports should be regulated and should be allowed. You want a male audience because they might be more prone to understand or to play it. And then you want a younger generation because they might better understand it than an older one. So I thought choosing Kansas was really interesting.
How'd I know that was going to come up?
Right. So I want to talk about trends in fantasy sports legislation. And I think that'll be the bulk of our episode. But before we get there, I think it's really important to distinguish between a state who says, yes, fantasy sports are okay, and a state that says, well, you need to fill out an application and you have to have a license number and you have to pay a fee. So could you walk us through, Blake, the different levels of regulation or registration for a fantasy sports company across the different states?
Sure. Yeah. We've got about a little under half the states now that you can just walk right into. You don't need to register. You don't need to get a license. You don't need to say, hey, I'm here. You can just open up and start offering paid real money fantasy sports where you can win money and do it without permission. Then you've got states that simply require that you register and pay a tax and pay a tax on that, those gross earnings that, you know, you're earning in their state. And then you've got the next level up, which is states that require licenses. And we've got a few out there that will break it up and say, okay, we've got minor licenses and we've got major licenses. If you're a minor operator, which means you have under this number of contests or this amount of revenue every year, then we're going to make it a little bit easier on you. But you still have to fill out a pretty extensive application and get licensing. And then they say the major operators that are making $5 million and holding thousands of contests, they need to do a little bit more and have a different type of license. And so there's a number of different ways that states are looking at this. We often will advise clients on just kind of a game plan on launching based on those different levels.
Yeah. So just to make crystal clear, the first point that Blake started with is under the UEJA carve out, there's a strong argument that exists that fantasy contests are a game of skill that's been widely accepted in most states. So there's a number of states you can just walk right into and you can operate. There's a couple of states that don't allow it at all. I think, is it five, Blake? Three, four, five?
Five.
How many is it?
Yeah, it's
there's five states that don't allow it at all. At this point in time, I think there's 23 regulated or legislated states. And again, those are a little bit different, like Blake explained. Some states require an application. Some states just require registration. Some states require a license. So that's 23 plus 5 is 28. So there's 23, because you have to include DC. So there's 23 currently unregulated.
There's one other level that I failed to mention, and that's the states that just exclude fantasy sports from their definition of bet or wager. That's something that actually Kansas, which he talks about in the episode, does. And I think more recently they included it in their sports wagering legislation as well. Rather than just exclude it from the definition of bet or wagering, they said this is not sports betting, but there's a handful of other states that do the same thing.
Okay, so this is getting really interesting. And the audience, you can already see how complicated this is. There's no federal standard for doing this. Blake said in Kansas, rather than defining fantasy sports and coming up with a process for applying for it or governing it, they just said it's not sports betting.
And they do define it, actually.
Oh, they do define it. Okay. So they come up with a definition for what a fantasy sports contest is, right, Blake?
Fantasy sports league, actually.
Fantasy sports league. Fun. Thank you. Okay, good. This is even getting more exciting. So they say fantasy sports league is excluded from sports betting. Sports betting, illegal at that point in time. Fantasy sports league, legal. All right. But then that begs the question, are the initial iterations of daily fantasy sports, FanDuel and DraftKings, you know, the salary cap, draft a roster, is that a league, right? And fantasy sports league, I think when they drafted the language, is meant to be, well, it's you and your buddies and you draft, you know, you have 12 people in a league and you each draft a team, and you do it over a season. So even the initial win here for fantasy sports was still rather imprecise with respect to the definitions. And then this is the problem that we have is that every state, or at least all the regulated states, for the most part, they don't use consistent definitions.
And on that note, fantasy sports league. So, I mean, the layperson, anyone that would hear the word fantasy sports league, you're going to think of, oh, exactly what it says in the episode. This is something that I do with my friends. How could this be illegal? This isn't sports betting. And so you think that when you hear the word fantasy sports league, which is what is in the initial legislation. Now, if you look at the actual definition, it simply mirrors UEJA identically. So it defines it the way that UEJA does, which has allowed for daily fantasy sports, but they call it a fantasy sports league exemption.
Right. And UEJA did not use the words fantasy sports league, which is, correct. You know, it makes it confusing. And then we haven't even talked about DFS 2.0 in this context. And how does that fit into that? But before we get to that, if we get to that today, I think we'll get to that in a subsequent episode. Let's talk about the velocity at which states applied. So I went and just did some quick research this morning, Blake, pulled from our website, a couple other websites. From what I could tell, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is close. 2015, one state addressed it in the legislation. 2016, eight states addressed it. 2017, three states addressed it. 2018, two. 2019, two. And then 2021. So from 2016 to 2019, you had 11, 15, right? In that four-year period, you had 15 of the 23 legislated states did it in that period. And then it slowed down to the last couple of years. It just went in one or two. And I don't even know if we had one last year, if we'll have one this year. So fantasy sports got really, really hot. Everyone wanted to legislate it, whether just explicitly allow it or license it or provide some sort of tax scheme or fee scheme. But now no one's really doing it anymore. So why, Blake? Why is no one concerned about legislating fantasy sports anymore?
It's because the focus has turned to sports betting. All of these offices, gaming commissions, lawmakers that are looking at the gaming industry and looking at this broader area of gamifying, or I'm reluctant to use the word bet or wager on sports, but having these contests and unquote contests that could be sports betting, this whole area is now turning to sports wagering. And because with PASPA being overturned, now states can pass laws that allow for sports betting. And so why would we go back and focus on this area that is going to make us less money, isn't as much of a threat, and is already going on in a lot of these states anyway under skill exemptions when they could compete with their neighbors and pass sports betting laws and then include a fantasy sports exemption or even regulate it alongside sports betting, which a lot of states have done by including fantasy sports authorization and regulation alongside sports betting. Like Arizona has done that, for instance. And I believe that even Florida, which is, you know, kind of a different animal in authorizing sports betting through the tribal compact, they included fantasy sports and fantasy sports regulations through that, but it's unclear of whether that only applies to tribal operations or to the industry as a whole.
So PASPA was repealed in 2018. So anyone who did it before then, again, there were 8 states that did this in 2015, another 3 in 2017, so 11. Anyone that did before them didn't have the benefit or the bias of sports betting definitions. And you know, you could argue that it might have been better to do it if you're a fantasy sports operator. You'd have preferred to do it outside the purview of sports betting because there was more of a chance of the language being imprecise, which might allow you to participate, might allow you to have more creative contests and operate in under the fantasy sports umbrella in those states. I think now, like Blake is saying, a lot of times it's not like fantasy sports are being specifically or directly legislated. They're being legislated as a result of a carve out or a distinction from sports betting. And if you're someone like a DFS 2.0 operator, which, you know, it's an interesting model because you can enter into a DFS 2.0 type contest, you know, these house-based or single player contests in Texas as a skill game. But if you wanted to do that in like a house-based one, if you wanted to do that in Vegas, it would 100% be regulated. And there's licenses, it's very expensive. So if a 2.0 operator is offering a contest in Texas, let's just assume that it can take 10% of the stake as its profit margin. But if it does it in Vegas, it's going to take that 10% and it has to turn around and pay some of that for licensing, some of that directly in taxes, and then it's going to have a lot more legal fees to keep up with everything. So states that are doing the language after or more recently, you're going to be more likely to have a defined line between sports betting and 2.0. Whereas I think states that had written the language back in 2016, 2017, before the repeal PASPA, probably going to be a grayer area. What do you think, Blake?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much right on target. And just again, you know, a lot of these states that have passed since that repeal are not just simply passing sports betting laws, but they're passing fantasy sports laws alongside.
So let's just say that you're a new operator and you've got a creative contest that might be pushing the boundaries in some states. Let's revisit to something you said earlier, Blake. What advice would we give to that sort of company who wanted to get out there and test the market and see if their offering had could get traction or could gain appeal?
I think that most generally, you know, first we've got to understand what the client's risk tolerance is, because if states crack down on these kinds of games, then, you know, you don't want somebody that is very risk averse. But if you look at a number of these states where those contests that are a little bit more cavalier and kind of the current gray area, because that's changed throughout the years of what is clearly acceptable and what's in a gray area. So what's in the current gray area, it's looked to the states where they've been operating for many years. A lot of them have actually received semi-permissions in terms of they've gotten cease and desist for certain game types, but then reached agreements in states that don't regulate fantasy sports. But then the gaming authorities say, okay, this is fine. This is fantasy sports. You're okay. So generally speaking, if the game is non-traditional DFS, there's kind of a question mark and it might be in a gray area. It's look to those states that have been more open to accepting non-traditional products and whether it's working with them to make them be okay in the state or they've been operating there for many years without issue, start there and go from there.
I think it was Arizona that passed some really favorable 2.0 language, wasn't it, Blake, a couple of years ago? That sound familiar? I seem to remember that there's a couple of states where the operators were able to get in there and really provide, you know, good input and influence with respect to the drafting. You know, one of the things we have to recognize is the legislators who are leading the drafting frequently aren't well versed on these types of contests. And then they certainly don't understand the nuances between a snake draft and a salary cap draft or a P2P or an H2H or a house-based, things like that. And so when you have legislators, you don't really understand it, drafting with imprecise language, one, it can create opportunity, but on the flip side, it can create confusion. Then as you mentioned, Blake, you know, we're seeing people, just look out there in the news at big names, big DFS operators are getting cease and desist or getting claims or sued by states and different AGs in the states because those AGs think that they might be in violation of the state law. So it's a really interesting place right now, because there is so much focus on sports betting, but there's still a lot of opportunity because Texas, Florida, and California currently are all unregulated. So there's a lot of opportunity for fantasy sports operators in those states.
What I will say on that note of the laws being passed a few years ago is we were involved in quite a few conversations with lawmakers, just, you know, kind of roundtables talking about how to define fantasy sports. And there was a lot of initial optimism that they would allow for these types of games within certain confines. But ultimately, those definitions didn't stick. And the big guys got in there and kind of shut it down and said, no, we've got sports betting defined in a way that does not allow for house-based games that look like player propositions. And so ultimately, those laws did not stick.
Yeah. All right. Well, appreciate everyone listening in. I'm going to wrap this up here. Blake, you have any final thoughts before I wrap this up?
All I'll say is that I think that we could probably do an entire other episode on this episode, just with how this transitions into sports betting and kind of the analogous route that was taken. But yeah,
we'll pick that back up with the next one. So with that, this is Kevin and Blake signing off. This has been another episode of Vig and Juice. Today we reviewed season 5, episode 3 of Michael Lewis's Against the Rules podcast. Appreciate you listening. Make sure you like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.